Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening and welcome to Peach State Pandemonium for February 7th, 2013. This is Michael Norris. As always, I am joined by my tag team partners, Gary Oates and Bobby Simmons. What's going on in Georgia this evening, gentlemen?
Well, according to Bobby, he needs a wrap. Yeah, it's the cold front's moving in up here now that the rain's gone.
Well, is it going to drop much, Bobby, or just a little bit?
No, just a little bit. I think tomorrow it's supposed to. Today the high was like 52 or something. I think tomorrow it's going to be about the same thing.
Let's just be thankful we're not in the Northeast because they're.
Oh, goodness.
Posted on Facebook, they're predicting a foot to two of snow.
Yeah, I heard 2 inches around, or 2 foot around Boston, maybe.
Ugh. Oh, man. That's just.
I'm glad it's them and not me.
Well, it'll snow in Tennessee again before it's over with.
Listen, poor old Bo and Misty was iced and snowed in for 3 days.
I know it.
I talked to him just a few minutes ago, and he told me, he said when he got to the end of his road, when he finally got out, the thing started thawing a little. He said that down there where all his communications were, his phone, his cable, internet, and the whole thing, said it was 3 feet underwater.
Yep.
Good Lord.
They got it bad. Well, they've gotten floods and snow and rain and tornadoes and everything else within the last month up there. I told him that'd be a sign for me to pack up and move somewhere.
Well, as Bo says, the locust and the boll weevils will be next.
Oh man, I cannot imagine. Well, Mobile's almost as bad. But it stormed here. Like I said, I bet we got 3 inches of rain between midnight and 6 o'clock this morning, and by 8 o'clock the sun was out, and the high today was 70-something.
Hmm.
So I've always said about Mobile, if you don't like the weather, just wait a few minutes, it'll change.
Well, 3 weeks from today, I'll be there, sir, good Lord willing. I'd appreciate if you'd put in an order for some nice weather.
Well, I'm trying. I am trying because I got to be out and about and all that too. You know, and that's one of the things when we get our guest Terry Lawler on later on in the show that he's involved in that too. We're mainly going to talk about the Ted Allen thing coming up next weekend. But Bo is all, I mean, not Bo, I'm sorry. Terry, don't get mad at me. I compare you to Bo, but Bo's a lucky man, so we'd probably all be lucky as Bo. But Terry's also involved in the Mobile thing right here. I tell you what, I would love to introduce the Oates brothers as the legends in the house. But I guess your scooter won't run this far, huh? Stop charges up. You ought to come down, Terry. We could put you on the stage, and you could show off your new knees. We'd dress you in a dress.
I'd be glad to show them off. I'm so proud of them. You've got no idea, brother. I thank God every day for them. I have a lady in my church, Jerry. She's 80 years old. She had a knee replaced 2 weeks ago today.
God bless her.
And I went to see her on Sunday. And but she's getting around on her walker and going up and down steps. And she's doing her exercises. And she said she's hoping in the next couple of weeks to be up and going again.
That's wonderful, Bobby.
So I told her, I'm glad. I said, you're tough.
Yeah, she is. If she's doing all that already, she's tough.
Mm.
I go tomorrow. I go see the doctor in the morning, and I hope that's the last visit.
Good.
But it's amazing what they can do. I mean, it's just amazing.
Mm. I know you're glad. I know you're starting to feel better.
Oh, I feel wonderful.
Pains in your knees for the first time in forever. When did you you had knee surgery back in the 70s? Did you have
first one knee? The first one was in 76.
How many did you have?
Five.
Ooh.
Three on one and two on the other.
Well, no wonder you needed new knees. They operated on them to the point they were worn out.
And, you know, I was really, I mean, if you want to call it blessed, I was blessed because all I ever had was cartilage. I never had any torn ligaments or any of that madness. It was just cartilage. And then, you know, when they go in there, they clean it out and they're removing cartilage. And then, you know, the rest of the story, you wind up bone on bone. And then,
yeah, I was going to say.
That's the pain. It's just a living hell 24 hours a day, every step you take. And I wrestle with them like that. You reach a point, you can't take it anymore. I couldn't. I just couldn't. Steps were out, you know, doing steps or anything like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they do shoulder replacement now, like hips.
Yeah.
And amazing.
Pretty much any part of your body, I guess they can build one out of titanium and put it in for you.
They can't fix my brain, though. I've already seen about that. Going to see about that.
Well, we're all guilty of that. They could do that, or there'd be a long line of ex-wrestlers lined up to have
that. They told me I had to have one to trade in for a new one.
Well, that
took me right out of the deal.
Me, Bobby, you got to have something to work with. And you know the deal there. So, but it is. It's amazing what they do. I mean, I still look at these scars and knowing what's in there. I can't believe it's in there. You know, it's just. It's amazing. It's just absolutely.
Well, the thing that I always tell people when people start talking about these surgery things, I compare you and Ted. The first surgery you had, of course, they cut you from can to can't. I mean, you was all laid up, and it was just ridiculous. And then what? 6, 7, 8 years later, Ted had the same thing. And what, wrestled the next night, but they did his arthroscopically because they had come that far.
They did him Monday, and he wrestled Wednesday night.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, that's amazing to me.
I think he needs his brain checked.
Jeez.
Because I'll tell you, Bobby, I couldn't have done it. Of course, the first one wasn't scoped, but the other four were, and I couldn't have wrestled a day later. There's no way. I couldn't.
Hmm.
I think Mama dropped him as a baby.
It's all those matches he had with Wayne Cowan.
It could have been.
Well, let me tell you something. I love Theodore, but I'll tell you how crazy he is. He later in his career, he got his back got to where it bothered him some, and every once in a while it would go out on him. I mean, it'd just be horrible. He couldn't do nothing, and the first thing he'd do when he'd get in the ring is tell whoever he was working with to backdrop him.
That's a fact.
That's true. I've refereed. I've watched it.
You know, and I've seen it myself.
And he would, you know, and Ted, me and Ted, I got to work with Ted a couple of times, and we used to, you know, we weren't real bright. We would see who could go highest on backdrops, and Ted could take a mean backdrop.
He could do that.
And buddy, when he would get up there, he'd come down on that back, and 9 times out of 10, he'd look up and go, "It's okay." It popped back in, and he'd get up and be all right. But I would always think, man, that one time it don't.
Funny. I talked to him the other night, and I said, "Hey," he wondered how my knees were doing. I told him, I said, "How you doing?" You know, his knees are shot, Bobby, and his back bothers. He's had his neck operated on.
Yeah.
He said, "I'm doing pretty good." He said, "I'm 2 steps away from a nursing home." Crazy.
Well, I guess I told Bobby before we went on the air, this is the first week in a while I don't have a death to report, and I'm happy as I can be with that.
I was just sitting here waiting.
No, but the big news, I guess, this week is the addition to the WWE Hall of Fame with Bruno Sammartino. And he and Bob Backlund are both going in this year, and no matter what your thoughts are about Vince McMahon or the WWE or their – Hall of Fame or whatever. But that is two gentlemen who are certainly deserving, especially Bruno. If it hadn't been for Bruno, there would not have been a WWWS or a WWF or a WWE. That company was built on the gamble of taking somebody who was only in the business 3 to 4 years, pretty much unknown outside of the Northeast and Eastern Canada, and putting him on top in the media capital of the world, and it's a gamble that paid off.
Did either one of you gentlemen ever meet him?
No. I wish I that would be
never met him. I saw him work one time in person, and I was disappointed.
I'm not a big fan of Bruno the wrestler, but I'm a big fan of Bruno the human being and the man.
Yeah,
he carried himself the way Lou Fez did. He carried himself as a champion. Like I said, he spent 8 years as the world champion up there in the media capital of the world, New York. And if you were a fan and picked up a magazine anytime in the 60s, from 63 to 75, more than likely, Bruno San Martino's picture was on the front of it. And he never seemed to let that go to his head. He always carried himself with dignity, and just seemed like a decent human being. Jerry, have you ever met him?
I met him one time in St. Louis. I was fortunate enough to be on a double main event in St. Louis. I was working with Murdoch, and Bruno was on the other main event. I forgot who he was working with, and I met him. He was one of the nicest men I've ever met. And that's the only time I ever met him. It was like he knew me forever. You know, how are you? It's nice to meet you. I've heard of you. I've certainly heard of you, you know. it was like, you know, it wasn't like, well, I'm Bruno, you know. But to get to his work, Dickie was in Japan with him. And Dickie told me he was in awe of him, his work. He told him, he said, I can't believe you're working like this. He said, that's not what they want where I am. Dickie said he was in awe of his work, so he could work. But he was
really?
In New York, you know. I mean, that was there. Everybody that went up there, even the guys from the South that went up there, I know, you know, it was kind of what it was. But you can't knock success. I never heard anybody say a bad word about him that
I ever met.
You know, actually knew him. I can say I met him. I didn't know him, but I was impressed with him. And he carried himself. He looked so impressive, and you know, he wasn't a tall man. He was a big man, but he wasn't, you know, a very tall man. But he looked the part, and I was very impressed with him.
Nice. So that there was enough in his personality and in his charisma to pack those places up there in the Northeast for 8 years.
Oh, they loved the first go around.
And 3 more years the second go around. So he was something. The only thing I think it's a shame that they're doing him Backlund at the same time, because in my opinion Backlund deserves as much accolades as well, because you know, I hate that he's being overshadowed by Bruno, because Bob was a tremendous worker, a tremendous champion, but his personality is not as charismatic as Bruno, so I think he's going to be overshadowed a bit. And I'm actually going to attempt to watch their television program, and I hope they give good airtime to both of them and don't, you know, and not to say that, not to knock Mick Foley or Trish Stratus or whoever else comes along in the meantime that they're going to induce or induct, but like I said, that company was built on Bruno San Martino, and Bob Backlund had to have been doing something right too for them to keep him on top for 5 years. He was the second longest.
Does Bruno still live in Pittsburgh?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. He. I'm surprised they didn't put him in there a long time ago.
I think a lot of that was his reluctance, from what I understand. He's, and you know, you read rumors and stuff like that. Supposedly, part of the stipulation going in was that he's that McMahon's not to have any contact with him, but, you know, supposedly. I don't think that's the case. I would think he would. I'm sure the two of them have talked recently for him to have accepted that. But he's evidently impressed with whatever they're currently doing, and so he's finally agreed to do it. Plus, he's 82 years old, you know, and I think it's, yeah.
Is he really?
Yes.
Oh, I'd have never guessed that.
It's time for him to, you know, get his dues, I think. And that was a company, I mean, he traveled to other territories, and he would do special tours of other territories, but he mainly worked, it was the only place he ever worked once he was, you know, established.
Everything just fell in place this year, I think, for that induction, because everything I've read and everything I've heard, he kept refusing because he doesn't like Vince Jr. at all, and Triple H is the one that finally convinced him to do the thing. Plus, everything kind of fell in line because it's in they're going to have the ceremony in Madison Square Garden this year.
Right,
that's
right.
Fitting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Bobby, you can answer this. Wasn't Tom going to bring him when y'all were with Gunkel?
Yeah, he was booked. I mean, he was advertised. Tom booked him to come in to work, and he was advertised on a Tuesday night, and he was a no-show.
What went wrong? Do you have any idea?
Barnett got to him, paid him off, got a hold of the senior Vince, and I'm sure it got bought off and squashed.
Yeah, I thought that was
the only other guy that I remember for Gunkel, that the big name that was booked that was a no show was Eduardo Capontier. We had him advertised and he was a no show.
Did you ever meet him?
Never did.
He was in Kansas City. He was gonna. I forgot how that happened. He was there like a week, and so we did TV Saturday morning. So he was going to ride with Ted and I wherever we were that night. So I told him, I said, I got to go by the house. Very handsome man, just handsome. So I got to the house, and Kathy opened the door. And she said, oh, my gosh. He's got this French accent, you know, very handsome. So she was impressed with him. He was a nice guy. He was a super nice guy.
Yeah, that was another one that once you saw one of his matches, you saw pretty much all of them. But he drew crowds, and especially around Montreal.
He was a gymnast, wasn't he?
He was a gymnast. Yes, he was an Olympic gymnast. He was French, but his ancestry, he was actually Polish. I can't even pronounce his real true last name. It's got about 48 letters in it, and 52 of them are consonants.
All these funny little things, little lines above the letters. He was Polish? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was of Polish descent, but he grew up in France. And I think he either did represent France in gymnastics at the Olympics or was supposed to or was on the team or something. Around, I think, 1948, around the same time Michonne and Gagne were representing their countries in wrestling. And he worked in Europe for several years before he even came to the United States. But he was well enough thought of for Fez to, you know, agree to at least split the title with him. He never really dropped it to him. But he split the title with him. That allowed him to have recognition in parts of the country's NWA champion. So, but every match I ever saw him, he worked the same way, and he did the same finish. He'd flip off the top rope and hit the guy in the stomach and then do a cannonball on top of him, and that was it.
He lived to be in his 80s, too, didn't he? He was like 82 or something when he passed away.
I think he may have been a little bit older than that, 84, 85, I don't remember. But he was, he was in his 80s. And evidently stayed in good shape.
Got a body on him. He's a nice gentleman.
But back to the Hall of Fame thing, again, talking about Bob Backlund, I know both of you were around him more than you were San Martino. But did you ever wrestle him, Jerry?
Never did, no. He hadn't been wrestling long when they brought him here to Georgia. That Joker, he would do leg raises all night long in that dressing room.
Uh-huh.
He's always doing something. Was you around him much, Bobby?
Yeah. He would after his match was over. I mean, he would do all this stuff before the match. Then he'd go out and work. Then he would come back, and he would do sit-ups, and he would jump rope. I mean, this would go on for a couple of hours.
Yeah, I'd get tired before my match.
The sit-up thing, and I believe it was Ronnie Garvin. Somehow we figured out that he had a popcorn Jones. I mean, if he started eating popcorn, he wouldn't stop. So we were in Athens one night, and he was working with Ronnie Garvin, and Garvin come in there and handed me three or four bags of popcorn, and he said, go over and feed them to him. And, you know, you couldn't blow the guy up.
No, you couldn't.
Could not blow him up. But we blew him up that night because I sat over and fed him popcorn for an hour. Every time he'd do a sit-up, I'd put popcorn in his mouth every time he went back down. And he wouldn't stop. I mean, he was addicted to it. And that Ronnie Garvin rode him, son. It's the only time I ever seen him blow up.
Speaking of popcorn, the best popcorn I ever put in my mouth was in Columbus, Georgia, at that auditorium.
Yes, sir. There. Well, Atlanta was good, too, because they popped it fresh air, too. I know in Atlanta we usually didn't get around. I mean, you guys, when you was in the dressing room or you was working, you didn't get around to where that stuff was, but... they cooked that. They popped that stuff fresh out there in front. It was good.
You smell that stuff, it'd run you mad.
Oh, jeez.
Well, didn't Backlund have a thing too where he did the steps all the time? He did a little portable thing, a set of steps or something. Three steps up, three steps down.
I never seen him do the steps.
I can't remember what show it was. He was on some television show or one of the, I don't know what territory it was, whether he was visiting one of the territories or if he was in New York at the time. But one show I've seen someone on, he did that for a full hour, up and down those steps.
I know Orndorff did, not Orndorff, but Ellering got into that.
Oh, really?
Yes, he did.
Well, supposedly that's what Backlund does for a living now. He sells those steps. He's had his whole thing, a workout program or whatever, and that's what he does. But Bobby's told that story before about him with the popcorn and everything. I was talking to Bo James yesterday, and Bo's a good friend of Jimmy Valiant's. And Jimmy said he was with him in Florida, and he was with him in New York, of course, when Backlund was champion. And he never owned a car that anybody could tell. He rode a bicycle to meet somebody to ride with him to a town. They'd drop him back off, and he'd ride his bicycle back home.
Wasn't he teaching school after he got out of the business?
Wasn't he doing what? Yeah, I think he was. He was, I believe he lives in Connecticut. I think he was a coach or something like that. He tried to run for state Congress or something there, and I don't think he got very far, but I don't know what he's done since then. I know he's from Princeton, Minnesota, and I don't know if he actually went to Princeton or not, but or what college he went to, but he was an AAU champion too, if I'm not mistaken. But I never did figure the fit for him in New York. Even though he was successful, he was so different from the typical champion they always. They usually had an ethnic champion, Bruno or Pedro Morales or whatever, and that were, you know, but they actually, Bob was more fit, in my opinion, to have been an NWA champion. I think he would have been followed in the footsteps of Dory Funk Jr. because he could adapt to any style. He was an outgoing personality, but that really, back in the days of the NWA champion, really wasn't a necessary thing, as Briscoe and Dory Funk Jr. proved. that you didn't have to be, you know, have this overwhelming personality to be a great champion. All you had to do was be able to work with anybody, and I think Backlund could have.
You know what they tagged him as up there, don't you?
Howdy, well, other than Howdy Doody, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they called him.
Huh.
That's when they had all the heels calling, yeah.
I think this is an only booking thing, but we're running an Omni card, and they booked Backlund. He was a champion up there at the time, and they booked Backlund down here against Flair, and Ole builded his title against title. And Barnett didn't know about it, you know, because he left everything to Ole as far as the booking was concerned, and McMahon didn't know about it. And when the news hit that it was champion versus champion for title against title, you talk about the political end of this thing going crazy. Son, you should have seen the phone jumping off the desk at the wrestling office. I mean, that was something you didn't do. I mean, if I'm a wrestling fan and I see that, and I'm the not just the average fan. I'm the guy that buys the magazines and I keep up with what's going on best I can. I mean, when you see that match, what's the first thing you think of?
1 hour.
And that's exactly what they did. And, you know, I mean, it was just, it's like telling people, you know, here's what we're going to do. So, I mean, you couldn't even, you know, NWA didn't want to get their champion disqualified. And, of course, New York didn't want Backlund to get disqualified, so because you can't raise either one of them's hand, because, you know, you had Apter here taking pictures for his magazine, and you had the Japanese guys in and out of here all the time doing stuff for their stuff over there. I mean, it was just, there was no alternative but for them to go an hour.
It's not a win-win situation.
No, sir, there's no way to win in that.
Well, he was there. They brought him in earlier than that, too. And he did an Omni card, but I can't remember who he defended the title against. But I remember he was on television and worked against Gerald Finley. Or that may have been the same time. I don't remember. Was Gerald still around?
Yeah, Finley was here. He was, yeah. Yeah, I was still around then, so Finley was around.
So, yeah, I think what you're talking about was around 82 or so. So it may have been the same time. Because I've got that. That on tape with him and Gerald Finley working together. And he got out of the back and got out of the ring, walked over to the podium, and Gordon said, "Man, when are you going to get in shape?" Because
huh.
That's one thing he was. He was.
Yes, he was.
Certainly in shape.
Well, before I know you're gonna, I don't know what time you got Terry coming on, but before we get to that, I just want to let everybody know that might be listening here in the Atlanta area. Bo James will be the guest speaker at my church on the 17th. That's the day after the Nightmare to Remember card, and he'll be speaking in the 11 a.m. service. So I just want to invite anybody that might be in the area to. Come here, Brother Bo James. That morning, you'll be worth the trip for you.
You're gonna have a church full of wrestlers too.
Well, that'd be all right too.
Cause I know I'm coming, bringing Bowman and Roberto Soto with me. I told Roberto he's gonna have to sit in the corner. And I believe Bob Kelly's gonna follow us over there.
Good,
because he hasn't been to the since you've been at. This church, he hasn't been there, so he's going to follow me over there.
Well, he came up for Rocket's funeral, but he hadn't been to a service there.
That's right.
He was there for that.
He didn't know how to get there from Villa Rica. I may tell him we may not be able to get there from Villa Rica.
I'm not sure you can. I have to come back home and start over.
That's another appearance you need to make, Mr. Oates. We need to get you out of your shell, sir.
Listen, I got a man's got a plane. I talked about him flying me to Mobile.
Well, there you go.
I wish you would.
We'll pick you up at the airport. Somebody will. It's better than if we can get Burhead Jones here from the Montgomery Greyhound bus station, we can get you from an airplane somewhere. Oh, man.
He's lucky he made it alive from that Montgomery bus station. My wife was with us, Jerry, and she's sitting in the front seat of Charlie's van. I was driving. She's in the front seat. And Burhead, let's just say he had several cocktails before we picked him up. Loud. I mean, you've been around Burhead. You know how loud he is to begin with. And Debbie just got to where she was ignoring him. He leaned up and tapped her on the shoulder. He said, "Pardon me, miss. Anybody home?" Needless to say, it got very quiet.
Where's he living now?
He lives in New York.
New York.
Yep. Charlie Smith talks to him about once, twice a month.
But I haven't seen him in years.
He ain't changed a bit. He is so funny.
He always was funny. He was so funny.
Down in Mobile on a Thursday night, they had the back of a Mexican restaurant reserved for all the guys that wanted to go over there and eat. And they sent you upstairs, and they tell you it's all the way in the back. He come in, and he got over there. The lady told him, said, "You got to go all the way to the back." He, you know how loud he is. He goes, "Well, some things never change here in Alabama." They just look at Burhead and say, "Go to the back." But I'll tell you, this is the absolute truth now. I'll tell you how over he was down there. He had not wrestled there. I mean, this is probably 5, 6, 7 years ago, maybe longer, maybe 10 years ago. We were sitting outside the hotel. It was a pretty sunny day, and everybody had taken their chairs. And we're just all lined up out on the sidewalk talking, and people are walking up and down the sidewalk, stopping and chit-chatting. And these two guys pulled in, and they're trying to sell watches and chains, and you know the deal. And they come up there where we were, and Louis Tillet was standing there, and there was a couple other people. And, of course, they started buzzing them about their stuff, you know. Well, finally the guys say they ain't going to sell nothing. They get in the car. Burhead was in the last room down there, and he was sitting on the sidewalk. And the guy started down through there, and all of a sudden they slammed on the brakes, and these two guys jump out of that car and scream, "Burhead Jones." And he had probably not wrestled there, Michael, in how long?
Since 1976.
So it had been, what, 10, 12 years, 15 years maybe, longer?
About 20 years.
Yeah. And these guys were probably in their 20s, so they had to be just kids when they saw him, and they knew who he was.
That's something.
As over as he was here, he was 3 times as over in Montgomery, Alabama.
Yes, he was.
I bet you can go to anywhere in Montgomery, Alabama and say his name and get something free.
Where was he from originally?
He was from Monk's Corner, South Carolina. That's
How
where his family was
all
from. He broke in up there. He broke in that same school that Roberto Soto and Manny Soto and Pedro Morales and Frank Martinez and all those guys broke in up there. Pepe Figueroa. Well, Figueroa was probably 20 years ahead of all them. But I think Argentina Roca had a school up there, and he ran, you know, all those Spanish burros up there using all these guys. And Victor Rivera came out of that school, but Burhead broke in up there. And he first started working up there under his real name, Melvin Nelson. And they sent him to where they sent all those guys when they didn't have room for them. They sent them all to Gulas, and he renamed them all. And Gulas named him Jimmy Jones because for whatever reason in the 60s and 70s, if you were a black wrestler, your last name had to be Jones. If you've ever noticed that. He was either Armand Hussein or Jones. But he was the only one. I'm surprised they didn't name him Armand Jones. But he came down here for the first time in 68, 69, something like that. And, of course, back then, a black man and a white man couldn't wrestle each other here in this area down here. So he wrestled Frank Hester, who was in here working under the name of Siki Samara. And they wrestled each other, and then Burhead stayed and refereed a while. And the first mixed match they ever had in this territory, not counting Ernie Ladd on the Louisiana end, was Billy Boy Hines and Burhead in Panama City. and Billy Hines is the one that gave him the Birdhead nickname. He kept saying on TV, and of course you couldn't get away with this anymore, but he kept saying on TV that, you know, he was going to get that little Birdhead so-and-so, and, you know, and Birdhead just picked it up as a nickname. That's what he was known as from then on. Well, actually, Jimmy or Billy Hines said he was calling him a cockle Birdhead, and he shortened it to Birdhead, and that's what he's been known as ever since. But that's what the New York connection is, and I don't know if he's got family up there or what the deal is, but he's originally from South Carolina.
Hmm.
Yeah, there was a
Frankie Hester. He was a good guy.
Yes, he was.
I thought
and
the world
good worker too.
Yes, he was.
He was finally getting a little push somewhere. They're working for Goulas when he was killed in the car wreck. But anyway, I'm going to... Go ahead, Jerry.
I just said that was a horrible night.
Yep. It was. A lot of talent lost in that one car wreck. I just think Lawler was supposed to be with him.
Really?
Yeah. He was, but he wound up riding either Buddy Wayne or Frank Morrell or somebody he was riding. Or no, it wasn't. It was Pat Malone. He ended up catching a ride with Pat Malone. And they went around them. Sam was driving, and they went around Jerry and Pat. And if I've got this wrong, Bo James will correct me. So he knows all this. But they went around them doing about 110 miles an hour, and, you know, a few minutes later they came across the wreck on the highway.
Who was in the car besides Bass and Hester, wasn't it?
Pepe Lopez.
Wasn't he the one that worked here as Jimmy Dancing Bear?
Yes, Jimmy Dancing Bear. Yeah. Ruben Rodriguez was his real name, Pepe Lopez.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how many mask gimmicks he did for Goulas. If there was a mask team up there, he was one half, and Gene Bennett was usually the other half. Frank Martinez. Pepe worked a lot of gimmicks up there. Tony Russo was another one that worked up there. A lot of mask gimmicks.
Tony Russo, was that the little short barrel-chested guy?
Yes. He was. What a good worker he was. I don't think he ever won a match that I know of, except for when he was doing his mask gimmick. When he was just Tony Russo, I never saw him win a match, but boy, he made so many people look good. He was such a good worker.
Hmm.
You ever wrestle him, Jerry?
Yes.
What was he like to work in the ring? With in a ring.
He was so thick it was hard to do anything with him.
So short.
Yeah, he was thick as a barrel, man.
Yeah.
You know, the worst guy I ever saw, as far as being barrel chested, the worst guy I ever saw that guys had a hard time working with was Oscar Verdu. Verdu.
Lord. Oh, please.
Get your arms around him.
Oh, geez.
I've had matches with him.
Oh.
I would imagine working with him was about like what it was like working with Yukon Eric back in the day. That was another huge one.
Who was that?
Yukon Eric. I know you know who Yukon Eric was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, Dickie and Yukon Eric wrestled Assassins in Jacksonville on a Thursday night.
Yep.
And he drives to Carrollton, Georgia that night and killed himself.
Yep.
Cartersville.
Was it Cartersville?
Cartersville. Went to the church where him and his wife, who had left him, got married, and he shot himself in the parking lot of the church.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember Jody. I heard Tom tell the story, and Jody told it too about, I think it might have been Tom told me, said that just there was something. Said they were the last ones to leave the building that night, and he was sitting in a parking lot by himself, and they said that there was just something not right with him that night.
You never know what somebody's thinking, do you?
No, you don't.
Yeah, I think Dickie told that story here on one of the times he was on with us. Too.
Might have been Dickie. I had heard Tom had told me that deal. He just, you know, I mean, it was just a
still show you, even with, no matter what, how much money or success you have, your mind can get warped.
Yep, it can do that.
Well, anyway, I'm going to take a quick break, and we get back to, I'll get Terry on the line with us, and we'll talk about the events coming up next weekend. So I'm going to take a quick break real quick, and we'll be right back.
All right.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.
They're going to arrest me one of these days for killing this show every week. I hit the wrong button.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling Television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
We didn't go off the air. I hit the wrong button.
Well, I'm going to have one of you guys run this switchboard.
Careful now. You're cutting into my side money. Oh, man. I'm going to have to train one of you guys how to do this switchboard so I can take about a year off.
Well, I hope I have more luck than you've had with it. That's just a joke. That's just. I think you do well, sir.
Terry Lawler.
Hey, how y'all guys doing?
Doing great. Welcome to PSA Pandemonium. How are you doing this evening?
Doing real good, sir. Just trying to get this last little bit of advertisement and final fine tuning of the Nightmare Show.
That's what I love, a man out there putting up posters.
They don't go to the do they?
No. Well, what have we got to look forward to next weekend? Anything new going on? Anything changes from the last two shows or anything like that? Any new people?
Well, the thing is I know y'all probably touched on it, and the fact that we, you know, lost a couple of friends that was close to a lot of us, and some of y'all knew him more than, you know, than we did. But we, you know, we lost Brad Armstrong, and also Big Bill Joe, the latter part of last year's stuff. And I think Mike, yourself, and a few other, Bobby was there when we kind of talked over stuff, and agreed that it probably, you know, be a good thing to acknowledge both gentlemen at the Ted show, or the Nightmare to Mirror show, because I mean they were all good friends with Ted, and so this year we are honoring Brad Armstrong and Big Bill Jumbo both with the Lifetime Achievement Awards for wrestling.
That's great.
Yeah.
And Bullet Bob Armstrong is supposed to come up from Pensacola to step on behalf of the family there. Ron Simmons has been signed to come and present that award to Bob, and then we also have the Jumbo family coming up on behalf of Bill to accept the awards. And not that our show is any better than any other shows here in the Southeast, it's just that there's so many close-knit families and friends that's going to be here already for the Nightmare show that it just made more sense to, you know, take advantage of everybody in town and stuff, and then pay our respects and also show our love for those two gentlemen and also still honor Ted Allen at the same time.
That's fantastic. This show is always it grows every year. More names are added every year. More people, the more people that find out about it want to be involved in it, because Ted Allen must have touched more people in the wrestling business than anybody I can think of. He was around for so long, and you know, everybody that you meet has a Ted Allen story. So he touched so many of us, and like I said, so many people want every year to be involved in this, if it's nothing else than just showing up but say hello to the fans. And I know I'm bringing Bill Bowman and Roberto Soto with me up for the show, and they're both looking forward to it. So I guess it'll be the first time either one of them have been in front of wrestling fans, and well, Bill I know since the mid-70s, and Roberto I guess since the mid-80s, first time he's been around, but they're both really looking forward to it. I talked to them both today and trying to piece together our game plan for getting up there and everything, and we're all looking forward to it. So,
myself and along with the co-promoter Todd Howard, this is always our biggest show of the year. This is our Super Bowl, our WrestleMania, our World Series, anything that you can say that's big in sports. This is our biggest event, and we look forward to it. So if we take a little break off from last year, then we take a break, and then our mind starts working again and trying to figure out how we can make it bigger and better. And then with people like yourself and Bobby, always, you know, give us guidance. And then also, like I said, you're bringing up Bill Bowman and Roberto Soto. And just every year we try to make something different. But being that we grew up on wrestling, and we still have respect for those who have come, you know, paved the way for a lot of generations. But last year, as we put everybody in the ring, legends and special guests, this is your appreciation. But last year, we had so many wrestlers, and it wasn't so much the weight, there were so many wrestlers. That was my disclaimer, by the way. But we're having so many legends that want to be involved in this event, which is great. The rain started sagging, so this year we're going to do something different. We're going to do a parade of legends and special guests. When your name is called, you can make a complete loop around the ring. You get one-on-one time with the fans, and then with the photos, you high five, touch the fans, and touch you. It's more interactive with the fans, and I think it's a lot different. I think it's going to be more better for everybody involved and the fans also, because you know, it's just the interaction stuff is, you know, being an entertainer and stuff, you like to be able to do that stuff. And this one thing we're changing here, besides having the Lifetime Achievement Awards, we're doing, you know, parade of, it's almost like a parade of champions, but it's a parade of legends and special gifts.
And those of us, a lot of people don't realize, but those of us that know Terry and the people that work with him on this is not something that they wait until the beginning of January to start putting together. Terry works on this all year long. And besides what he does, wrestling and his normal activities, he works on this as well. And it's as much a tribute to you as to how well this thing comes off as it is to those that you're honoring, because this is a first-class event. And I look forward to it almost as much as, and I'm not, by saying almost, I'm not downplaying what your event is there, but it's almost become as important to me as the Gulf Coast Reunion. And I'm kind of looking at them as the same thing, because they're always so close together. They're two sides of the same coin to me, if you know what I'm talking about, because it's a very important thing, and it's really become something I look forward to every year.
We appreciate it. We look forward to your stuff, but they actually did go hand in hand, because Ted started, I guess, the Sunshine Jar, which is called now the Ted Sunshine Jar. He was a big factor in that stuff, so all of the profits raised from the ticket sales, the raffle sales, and the auction goes down to the Gulf Coast Wrestlers Union. So, they are really close, hand in hand, knit together. We thrive to make the Gulf Coast thrive, to keep Ted's memory alive and his hope and vision of helping other wrestlers out. And it's a brotherhood, and we're happy to have the support from the Gulf Coast, like yourself and Bobby and Cowboy Bob Kelly, it's such a long list of people and stuff, and we're honored to have you all to support us, help some guys out and stuff.
Well, you guys are certainly a welcome addition to our family down here as well. In fact, you are involved as well on the first weekend of March, which is when our Gulf Coast reunion is. As most people know, our reunion is only open to people who were in the business or are still in the business. And, a lot of people have asked over the years for us to do something different, to open it up to the fans. And those of us on the board, we've tried to keep the reunion itself to the spirit of what Lee Fields started it as. And that's just for the boys and the people that were in the business. But we are doing something different this year. And if this goes as well as we expect it to, it will become an annual thing. We are doing a legend show at the Theodore High School gym on Saturday night, March the 2nd. Most of the people who attend the reunion, the legends and the wrestlers that attend the reunion, will be on hand to be at that show, to do a meet and greet for the fans and everything. And we are also inducting Bob Kelly has started a Lee Fields Hall of Fame for wrestling and racing, because Lee was involved in racing as well. And we're inducting people into the first class of that Hall of Fame. And but we are also going to have some live matches, and that's where Terry comes in. Terry is, along with John Saxon, who's a local guy down here in the Mobile area, they are booking the three matches that we're having. And Terry, you're participating in one, I know, and John is as well. So have you got all that lined up that you can share what those three matches will be?
Well, in fact, one of them is going to be myself along with Kyle Matthews versus Chip Day and Corey Hollis. And then you had six-person mixed tag match. You got Robert Gibson of the Rock and Roll Express tagged with old Mr. James against John Saxon. And I'm not sure about the other two participants' names yet. I don't be misquoted on that one there. But,
okay. They
started to shape up me. I was honored to have Bob Kelly ask me to be a part, and I told him whatever he needs, we're there for in any kind of level, didn't have to wrestle or stuff. But he started handpicking some names he wanted on the show, so we just kind of took his guidance and started kind of lining stuff up that would be worked perfect stuff.
Once a booker, always a booker.
You can't run from it. You can take a long break, but you can't clutch it with him.
I'm handling security that night, so if he's in the dressing room too much, let me know and I'll pull him out. I may end up with a bulldog at the end. Oh man, but I think this is going to be. Bobby's put a lot of effort into this, and we're doing this as not only to begin to let the fans have some time with the people that work this territory, those that are still around for so many years, but also to start involving them a little bit in hand in hand with our reunion, because this, like I said, is hopefully will become. If this one comes off successfully, will be a part that we do of the reunion every year. But the main function of this is to raise money for Bob's daughter. She lost her husband a few months back, and so that's what this is about, is to raise money for her to help with some financial things going on. But this is great. I mean, we've got, the names are unbelievable. It's just too long to list. But if you go to Terry's Facebook page, to the Gulf Coast Reunion Facebook page, you can read all about what we've got going on. Bo James has got it as part of his Facebook page. So I as a board member of the Gulf Coast Reunion, I appreciate, Terry, your involvement and Bo's involvement in getting the word spread out. And I hope we pack the place out. I hope we turn them away.
The Nightmares Remember co-promoter Todd Howard and myself. Every year, we're appreciative of the support from the Gulf Coast, but we're starting to realize that it's almost turned into like a practice run for the Gulf Coast Reunion, because each year we're getting more and more support and members coming up to the Nightmare Show, knowing exactly where the money's going to go back down and stuff. So we appreciate the love and support that's been getting, going into this third year stuff. And because, if anybody's ever run a show, promoted or booked, it's not easy, and it's great to have support by your peers. And everybody wants to lend a hand. We're happy to be there, and I can officially say that, my band's been booked there, again this year. So,
you've got to look for it this year. You don't have to bend your hair solid. Now you've gone back to the Jailhouse Rocker. Looks like you fit right in with the show that you've been doing.
Yeah. I'm telling parents, that's the only place that books our band, so we're going to take a double knot.
Well, you may be upstage. We're trying to talk Gary Olsen into coming down here and putting on a dress and showing off his new knees, but he's not committed yet. So.
Oh, man.
One other thing we got going on that night, too, Terry, I think is worth mentioning, is Terry's brother Steve is going to be wrestling his last match there that night.
Yes, sir. And, the surviving members of Bad Company, which the reason was Ted Allen, Nightmare Ted Allen, John Michaels, my brother, and then eventually Grizzly Boone joined. Since Ted's no longer with us, the past 2 years, brother has kept the Bad Company going, and actually he brought me into it. But the surviving members of the original, which is Grizzly Boone, John Michaels, and my brother Steve Lawler, are all retiring as a team at the end of the match, which is, to me, my brother brought me in this business, and it's an honor for me to be able to promote his last match. And he and I tagged up. We did our last double shot together as a team last Saturday. And when I made that last hot tag at the end of the second match, I knew that was pretty much the end for our team. But it was kind of sad, but we got a lot of good memories.
If there's a whole lot of people breathing a sigh of relief that your pro-bar brother is.
Yeah, geez. They had them pictures on the internet today, man, and I hurt just looking at the pictures. I told Steve, I had a chance to talk to him here a few weeks ago, and we were talking, and I asked him, I said, do you remember the first time me and you ever met? And surprisingly to me, he did. The first time I ever met Steve Lawler, I refereed a match between Steve Lawler and Jerry Oates. Jody Hamilton was running Deep South, or whatever he was calling it at the time, and he called me, and asked me if I'd come referee, and they were taping a TV taping at some high school here in Atlanta somewhere, Stone Mountain, and that was one of the matches that I worked that night.
Well, you got bruised just being in the ring with those two, didn't you?
I got hurt walking to the ring.
A lot of people say that about me, huh?
Did you rep any more than that?
Do what?
So was you able to referee any more after that match?
I think I did one more. That was a semifinal. I limped through the last one.
Oh, man.
If all matches were as easy to work as with those kind of guys, then man, what a... You know, this business was a pleasure as it was, but there was some nights, man, it was hard work. And then there was other nights, man, you didn't want it to end.
Yeah, having seen both Steve and Jerry in action, I can say as a spectator, it was a pleasure watching both of them, too. I would imagine that was a great match. Well, I saw two names that you posted just recently that I haven't thought of since, I guess it was Joe Pettisino's group. One of the Nasty Critters and Danny D's. I didn't even know they were still around.
Yes. Nasty Critter and Danny D's both have both left the business. And Danny's preaching. And, I mean, those were part of my crew when I was in North Georgia days. So Danny was my manager. And me and Nasty Critters were both, we all three of us were the six-man tag team champions. National Security number two passed away several years ago still, so his brother and me still stay in contact. So it's a lot of fans have been asking about them two gentlemen stuff. So, I mean, I got connections and, you know, called them up and they're, you know, just happy to be aboard and come out and, you know, take part in this whole event stuff. It's like, you know, reuniting friendships all over again, you know.
That's fantastic. I mean, because you think of all the generations of workers that came through. That was the North Georgia days of what, 87, 88, sometime around that when you were. That was Pettisino's group, right? That Billy Starr was booking.
It was it went to 88 when it started really getting hot when we had the TV 69 36 going on with Joe Pettisino, Sammy Kent got involved, and then Joe fell out, and then Sammy and Danny started running, and then Danny bought it from Sammy, and then I think Danny ended up selling it to Ted Allen like in the summer of 99, and then it just kind of just totally disappeared.
Now that's somebody that he'd come along 10, 15 years earlier, would have made a lot of money in the wrestling business. Oh, well, a lot of you guys did the work that territory, but Sam Kent was a very talented manager. You know, when he was around, you know, small independent groups like that were about the only ones still using managers besides Memphis, and Memphis had their own guys that they took care of. But Sam Kent was like a combination of J.C. Dykes and Ken Rainey to me. He could draw heat just walking into a room, and that's what a good manager did. And, you know, it's a shame we lost him way too soon, but it's a shame he wasn't able to be in the business a few years earlier. He'd have made a big impact. He was that good to me.
He's definitely one of a kind. I mean, he had the look and appearance. You know, even when he wasn't at the ringside, he just when he walked in, like I said, just go to the locker room. So he had that look, and he just, you know, he worked his worked it well stuff, and it just drew heat. People loved to hate him. But we're looking forward to next Saturday, February the 16th at Bay Springs Middle School, Billerica, Georgia. Bell time is 10 p.m. Doors go open at 6. We've got the Nightmare Rumble and then 6 big matches all together.
Good. Now, are you still got advanced tickets on sale?
No, we didn't have any more sitting this week instead, but what we are doing just to make sure everybody still has a chance of saving $2 off each ticket is they find me on Facebook or find Todd Howard or LM Pro on Facebook. Send us a private message with your name, what tickets you want and how many you need, and we'll take the $2 off the tickets, just like the best ticket sales, and put it at the will call when the front door when you come in, so we'll have everything ready to go. You just gotta, you know, pay for it and then run on the inside.
Please, everybody, just listening to this, if you're already planning on coming, bring 10 or 12 people with you. This will be an opportunity for you to have your picture made with Bobby Simmons.
Yeah, buddy.
And get lied to by Charlie Smith.
$5.
Buy a gimmick from Charlie Smith. He's got competition now. He doesn't like to compete. He doesn't like selling gimmicks when Bo and Misty are selling gimmicks, because Bo's got somebody to attract people to his table. Charlie doesn't. I mean, if you had to stand in line, would you rather stand in line in front of Misty James or Charlie Smith?
I like Charlie, but I'm not going to vote on that one.
I like him too, but he'd be standing in that line as well, so he'd be the first one in that line. So.
Yeah, we try to listen to fans, and when people ask for certain matches, we try to go, you know, research and find them out, and we appreciate yourself and others who have, you know, from like Bill Bowman and Roberto Soto stuff, and we also got the Sergeant Buddy Park come back this year, Scotty Rich from ECW, WCW, he was trained by Ted Outland. And we got Ric Flair's old Valley 50 of the May is part of the special guest lineup stuff. So we try to have something a little bit for everybody. They got the younger guys, you know, then got the guys who, you know, made the stage known as the legend stuff. So we try to make a great family show, and not promising nothing into this year, but the last 2 years it's been almost a 4-hour show. So for ticket prices of 12 and 15, we feel like it's still a, you get your money's worth.
Oh, more than get your money's worth. It's just it's a great show. The matches are always very good. Just seeing the people in the crowd that are not even, you know, there to be recognized or anything, but just the people from the business that just show up just to be a part of this. Like I said, Ted was so loved by so many people, and he touched so many people that people just, you know, they'll do whatever they can to keep his memory alive. And Terry, you're certainly doing more than that, and as a friend, somebody who considered Ted a friend of mine, I appreciate it. I know Bobby does, I know Jerry does.
I almost wanted to buy a ticket, and I was already inside 2 years ago when that guy come running out of the dressing room. That's the funniest thing I've ever saw.
Oh, the one hit the bottom rope and shut back up?
Jeez.
They had a
deal where it was like they were sending guys into a battle royal every 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And they introduced this guy, and he come running out of the dressing room, and he was running 100 miles an hour. And he dove to go under the bottom rope. I mean, he stretched out like Superman. And me and Michael and Bob Kelly, and Curtis Smith, there were several of us sitting there in the stands watching. And just as he dove and stretched out like Superman, somebody put their foot on the bottom rope and pushed it down a little. He hit that rope with the crown of his head. He went from 60 miles an hour to zero, just swoop, and fell straight down on his face on the floor.
That
bleacher we was in come unglued. We was all in the floor.
To the emergency room.
Wonder didn't kill him.
Well, you just have to worry about.
We can't guarantee we didn't pop that, but you know. hey, that's how we open the show up, you know. Hey, with the bang, baby.
Yeah, last year Charlie Smith's referee and guy got dumped out, and he almost caught him. So that was a good deal. That was, you know. We had our moments last year.
We're doing that again this year. You know, just bring your shirts, and we're going to put y'all back up there.
I enjoyed it. I had fun.
So we can't, you know, on behalf of Todd Howard and myself and everybody involved behind the scenes on other promotion, like I said, I get a lot of credit for doing this stuff, and, you know, maybe the driving force or whatever you say, but anything great that the past years have been ain't done by myself, and there's a lot of people that don't get their credit stuff, but I appreciate them, and it's just a good team, you know. I got a good support group. long time, Howard, and people just lots to tell us how much that they want to help as much as they can and where they can, and without those people, we can't put on a good show neither.
That's true, that's true. And you guys, again, you've got a great support group with you, and you guys do a great job. Well, Terry, I know you've got lots to do, still trying to get things put together for this. I appreciate you giving us some of your time. Is there anything else you want to plug before you go?
No, just remember February 16th. Milk Time is at 7, doors at 6, Bay Springs Middle School at 122, Bay Springs Middle Road, Billerica, Georgia 30180. I got all the stuff memorized because, you know, you see it every day in and out, you kind of remember stuff like that. But like you said earlier, Seth, if you're coming, you know, tell all your friends, you know, bring your neighbors. You know, we want this to keep growing every year so we can keep honoring our friends Ted. And this year we're honoring Brad Armstrong and Big Bill Drummo, who was one of the, I think someone said, one of the longest running members, consistent members down in the Gulf Coast, I believe it was.
Yes.
So we're just, you know, we want this to be bigger and more people hear about stuff. Todd and myself this past Monday night went down to Phillips Arena when WWE was about to crank up. We just had flyers. I think we gave over 500 to 600 flyers out to wrestling fans, and that's the people we want to come to the show. So we'll see what happens. If anything, we're still going to have fun and put on a great show no matter what, but we appreciate that. You guys is on here with us right now, people on the Gulf Coast, and everybody's behind us. We it's a fun ride, and we appreciate everybody.
Well, we appreciate you too, Terry. Thanks a lot for your time.
All right, y'all have a good night, guys.
Thanks,
all right,
Terry.
Take
see
care.
You next
we'll
week.
See you next weekend.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, what that's a great show. Terry, you really do. You and Ted need to come to that. You guys need to try and make that.
All right.
We'll put you up in downtown Villarica at the Super 8 or something.
Ain't nothing wrong
we'll
with that, brother.
We'll get you a first-class suite.
I've paid more.
I'm sure. Oh, man. That's the list grows every year of people that are getting involved in that. And I truly do hope this down here in Mobile becomes as successful as what Terry does in Villarica, because this area, there's a long history here, and it needs to be recognized.
Well,
go ahead, Bobby.
I was just going to say he touched on it a little bit about all the profits from this show go to the Sunshine Fund at the Gulf Coast Reunion, and we don't normally say a whole lot about it, but I think it's worth saying. You being a board member, I'll let you announce it, but tell them how much money they donated to the reunion last year.
It was, it was 4,000, wasn't it?
Six.
It was right at 6,000, that's right.
$6,000.
Right. It was 4,000 the year before.
4,000.
So
that's our Sunshine Fund goes to pay for guys that can't afford to come to the reunion to get their room or to pay for their food or whatever. You know, that's what it's for. So,
yep.
That's
how about fuel for that plane I'm coming in?
Yeah, well, we might just fill out a requisition form.
That's right.
In triplicate.
That's right. And we need 3 signatures, and you've already got. You can get mine and Charlie's with no problem. I can probably get Bowman to sign off.
I'd stretch him if he don't.
Oh, man. Oh. Hope that pilot's a better flyer than Lester Welch was.
Well, listen, one of my workout partners has a glider. You think I could come in that? I don't need any fuel.
Okay, you can land right there on the drag strip, right there.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And that is something new. This year we're the it's necessary because of the show we're doing Saturday night, but we're also going to try and wrap up at 2:30 on Saturday our reunion, because they've got a race book. Normally we have to deal with the dragster tries, you know, the tryouts or whatever they're doing on the afternoon if we're winding things up, but they've actually got a race booked on Sunday, so they've got people doing practice runs all Saturday afternoon, but they've given us until 2:30, so and that'll give plenty of time for everybody to get over to get cleaned up and get freshened up and get their gear, and those that are going to work, like Bobby.
Now, Bobby's not working.
Okay. Yeah. He's going to be signing autographs.
Right? I will be acting as the chaplain.
That's right.
That day.
And that's something and I'm sorry, Bobby, I failed to mention that all since this has taken place. Bobby Simmons has been made the official Gulf Coast Wrestlers Reunion chaplain. We came to that that decision shortly after the reunion last year. We all voted on it and awarded him that, I guess you'd call it an honor.
I still haven't quite got all the details down. Does this allow me to take up an offering?
Yeah, but Charlie says you got split it with him. And he gets first counts. I don't know how much you'll get out of that.
Yeah, thing. I was very honored that they thought enough of me to do that. But, yeah, that's Bob asked me if I would appear in my official capacity as chaplain of the reunion at his show. So I was ribbing Charlie yesterday. I told him he was going to have to referee at least two matches because they wanted a legendary referee, so I think he called Kelly.
Well, see, we got Scrappy. Probably Ray Hall will be there. We'll have Gump. But it's going to be a good time. I wish Jerry, I'm telling you now, get that airplane, go over there to Macon, pick up your brother, and you put him in the luggage rack if you need to. And you guys come down, we'll pick you up at the airport now.
I'll fold him up like an accordion and put him in there.
Now then, we'd spend all weekend trying to unfold him. His back will be still, and I don't think any of us can give him a backdrop anymore.
I don't think he will try.
Oh yeah.
Oh man.
Our last match, of course, Ted Allen was involved in it. Before we went out, he said, "Now he's got these two titanium plates in his neck that his back operated on." He said, "This is it for us." He said, "I think I'm gonna take one." I said, "I'm not even gonna watch." But he didn't do it. He couldn't muster up enough nerve to do it.
I still think you got one or two left in you, Jerry, now that you got new knees.
After I go see him in the morning, he may give me the go ahead.
I'll tell y'all, like I told Bully Busick last year at his head show, I said, if you see me on the mat, please come help me because you'll know I tripped. You know, the funny thing is, and I bet you guys are this way too, I'll watch a match or I'll watch something on TV or see, you know, my mind still tells me not only can I do it as good as they can, I can probably do it better than they can.
You believe
but
that,
my body will say, no, no, I can't.
I go to sleep sometimes at night replaying matches I actually had, thinking what I could have done to make it better.
You,
main thing
you,
was not triple
help. You need some help, sir, if you're dreaming that. You do need to get back on the road.
Well, hopefully that's coming up in about 3 or 4 weeks.
Well, good for you. I know you're glad.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get that little town. What's the town we play down by you at the beginning of every season?
Brunswick,
yeah. I'd love to get Brunswick. Not only because I can bug you all the time.
I'm coming if you get running.
Tell
the cannon man, get out of the way.
No, I'm going to have you sing the national anthem.
You do it as good as some of them, I promise you.
So they had this young lady, the last show I went to up here to racetrack, he was some kin to somebody, and this young lady came out to sing the national anthem. And her skirt was so short and so tight, if she had sneezed, it would have been an embarrassment for somebody, her or us watching.
Well, I'm not wearing a skirt, buddy.
You talking about when I was when I did it last
year? Yeah, one of the last one I went to over there.
I don't remember having a guest singer.
A girl sang the national anthem. She was kin to somebody, you told me.
Oh, yeah. She was the niece of our concession manager. That's
there you
right.
go, yeah.
She was a pretty girl, too.
Yes, she was.
But you're right. Every time, she had a crowd following her everywhere she went.
Yeah, if she had sneezed or she had been over to pick something up, it would have been total exposure.
That's right. I forgot about that. Oh, man. What's your wife saying?
She said she's surprised we wasn't waiting for her to bend over to see if anybody recognized her.
I was going
to
say, if Charlie had been there, he'd have been running
you know,
she... pitching quarters in front of her. He wouldn't have gone to it for a full dollar, but he might have thrown some quarters.
Jerry, I don't know how your wife does you, but let me tell you how mine does me. When Rocket Monroe's son got killed, me and Charlie Smith went to the funeral home. And we were standing on the front porch talking. And this little woman, I don't know who she was, she comes running up and hugs Charlie's neck. And she goes, "Oh, Charlie." And she grabs me and hugs my neck. And she goes, "Oh, Bobby, it's so good to see y'all." And she walked off. And Charlie looked at me and said, "Who was that?" And I said, "I have no clue." And my lovely bride looks at both of us and goes, "Maybe I can get her back over here and she can pull her pants down. Y'all might recognize her."
I can go with that.
I just can't take her nowhere. Listen, she's sitting here feeding me stories. You know, I don't embarrass easy. You know, coming out of the wrestling business, we're used to ribs and cutting up and everything. Me and her was in the mall over here several years ago, and we were walking down the mall, and we passed Frederick's of Hollywood. And there was this blonde walking in front of us about 10 steps, and she was very attractive, to say the least. And I looked at that little outfit in that Frederick's window, and I told Debbie, I said, "I wonder what that lady right there looked like wearing right there. And Debbie goes, "Well, if she'll try it on, I'll buy it for her." "Hey, lady. And Debbie starts chasing this woman down the mall, and the woman thinks Debbie's crazy, and she's running from her. And, of course, I'm totally embarrassed, and there was a ladies' dress shop right next door. They had one of them round clothes racks, you know, it goes all the way around. You might not think a person of my size could get in the middle of that clothes rack and hide, but I did. I was peeping through the clothes. And the woman got away, and Debbie came back up there and said, "I couldn't catch her."
Oh, that must.
So I don't do that much anymore.
That's what you call putting your foot in your mouth, isn't it?
Yes, sir. And, I don't embarrass me. She had me. I mean, I was hiding.
Kathy wouldn't do that to you, would you, Jerry?
No.
She's sharpening those blades on those skates, huh?
I see her sharpening those things all the time.
Does she still get to skate any, Jerry?
No, she won't. They have it around Christmas time at the Civic Center here, but she won't go.
Okay.
They got them, you know, you got to go in a certain way, and she just won't do it.
Huh.
Well, that's what you, that could be, you can bring her to the reunion, you two can skate as your act.
Oh, it'd be an act, all right.
She'd do a double act so you can catch her. Oh, man.
Now, I'll tell you that. I never could.
You're a lucky man. She put up with you all these years. You're a lucky man.
I am blessed. I think there's something wrong with her brain for putting up with me.
That's what I tell Debbie all the time. She put up, Bobby puts up with her all the time. She's a lucky person. She don't buy it though. Oh man. Well, next week, I got an email from Scott Peel here since we've been on the air. He was already going to be on with us, and he still is. But he's going to have a special guest on with us as well. Smokey Galento, who was the widow of Mario Galento, is going to join us next week as well. So there ought to be some good stories come out of that.
It should be. Yeah, as long as she can't shoot the gun through the phone, we're okay.
Yeah. Oh, me. Yeah, that's true. Don't check her gun before she calls. Did you ever work around Mario? Jerry, was he gone from Georgia by the time you got in the business?
I was around him some, Mike, not much.
What a character.
Yes, he was.
That was another one that stayed in shape. Now, he had to have been, when I worked with him in 81, worked show with him, I never wrestled him, but he was on a couple of shows I did in Dothan in 81. He had to have been in his late 60s then, but you'd never, well, of course, he kept his hair dyed black and long, still wore long, still had the earrings. But he was physically in shape. You'd have never known he was as old as he was.
No, you really wouldn't.
Because he was in his mid to late 30s. I'm sure Smokey, correct me if I'm wrong, next week. But he was in his mid to late 30s when he got in the business.
Really?
In the early 50s. So, yeah, he had bounced around and done a bunch of things before he got in the business. But I'm looking forward to that because that's one person that has always fascinated me because that was my grandfather's, besides Lee Fields, that was his person was Mario Galento. And I heard about Mario Galento my whole life growing up, and it was the biggest thrill of my life to work, you know, two shows with him on the card.
Well, he was the top heel in here, what, in the late 60s?
Yes.
Yeah, he was, I remember, and I had a chance to talk to Butcher Vachon. I remember, you know, Mario used the Hangman as his finish.
Right.
And then the Butcher came in here, and the Butcher used the Hangman, but the Butcher would spin when he put the Hangman on a guy. You know, sort of like the guy was in an airplane spin, only he was in the Hangman hold.
Right.
And I remember they did a big build-up for Mario against the Butcher because Mario's interview was always, I don't have to spin when I put a guy in it, you know. But, yeah, that was and one of the big feud I remember was Buddy Fuller and Mario.
Yeah, well, they worked together all over the country. Of course, that originated down here when Fuller had this territory down here.
Yeah.
Valenzo was the main heel down here for several years. And they went out to Arizona when Flora was out in Arizona. Mario went and worked out there as well. And then, of course, they were together in Georgia. Mario was in Florida for a while, but I don't think Buddy ever wrestled in Florida. I think he was just a promoter down there. I don't think he ever actually wrestled, at least after in the late 60s, early 70s, after he left Georgia. Mario was... After being a heel so many years, he was a babyface here for most of the 60s. And I think his last run up here was in 68, 69, somewhere like that. And then he never came back. But he came back. He lived in Pensacola. And he would still work various places. But he came back and did those shows for Fuller in 81, which is when I worked with him. That was, I don't know if him doing anything beyond that. But he could still go, and he could still get a pop out of the crowd. They all remembered him. But that should be an interesting show. Well, what else you guys want to talk about? I'm out of subjects. You're tired. You never thought I'd hear me say that, did you? What's that?
So we covered a lot of ground.
Let's talk about the Super Bowl. What do you guys think about it?
Well, I'll tell Kathy to get her blade sharpened up and see what she wants to
do. Oh, man. The Ravens almost let San Francisco do another comeback on them.
Yeah.
The best part about it is when the lights went out.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Knowing New Orleans, somebody didn't pay the light bill. But I guess what's come out since then is they had a transformer that they knew that was bad, and they just were too cheap to replace it. So,
they got a lot of publicity anyhow, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, it is. It made it unique. It was the most fascinating thing about the Super Bowl. That and the halftime show. Oh, man.
When I took my shower, I didn't even watch it.
I had it on. I was paying much attention. I was kind of pulling for the Ravens. They'd never won before. And so I...
Yeah, they won a Super Bowl.
The Ravens?
Yeah, that was their second one.
Was it? I guess shows how much attention I pay. I knew San Francisco won quite a bit back in the early 80s, but...
Yeah, that was the Ravens' second one.
When did they go before?
You got a year to get your Falcons straight, Bobby.
Do what?
You got a year to get your Falcons straight.
Well, I don't know what they're gonna do. They got to talk Gonzalez into coming back one more year.
It'd be crazy not to.
Well, as good as he played this year, I think he should, but he's
talking about retiring, though, isn't he? You talking about Tony Gonzalez?
Yeah. So I don't know what they're going to do. We're talking about drafting a tight end or a defensive lineman, and we'll see. Should be interesting. The big talk up here now is the new stadium.
Tell me about that.
Well, Arthur Blank, the dome is owned by the state of Georgia. So Arthur gets no parking concession. He gets the private boxes and all of that stuff goes to the dome. And he's wanting a new stadium where he controls it, where he gets parking concession and he gets... private suite boxes and all that stuff. They're talking about putting in, the Falcons are talking about putting in something like $700 million into this thing. So it's supposed to be a $1 billion project, I think.
Where are they talking about doing it?
Right next door to the dome. It's in this little, well, they call it the gulch. It's a bunch of parking. It's a bunch of dirt parking. And, they're talking about doing it right there and tearing the dome down. Originally, they were going to keep the dome and use it as part of the Georgia World Congress Center. So, I'm not sure what they're going to do now. So,
when did they open that dome?
It's about, I want to say 91.
That's what I was thinking, 90 or 91. It wasn't all that old when the Olympics came, I know.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was. The Olympics were here, what, 96? Yeah, it wasn't.
Yes, 96.
It wasn't.
It was earlier than that, Bobby, because it was before my daughter was born, because I was married at the time, and the company my wife worked for, the owner of the company, owner and CEO, John Imlay, was a minority owner of the Falcons. And we went to, they had an opening, a party there.
When were the Olympics here?
The Olympics were there in 96.
The dome opened in 90 or 91.
thinking it was more like 88. Maybe it was. I don't. Maybe my daughter was born. I have my ex-wife will remember better than
I do. Well,
I got
a ticket over here. I can't see, but I got a ticket over here. Was from the very first. It was commemorative ticket.
Yeah.
I've got it over here. I can't see it, but I'm sure it has a date on it.
We went to the big opening or party that they had there prior to the opening that all the owners of the Falcons were there and the players and all that stuff. And like I said, the person that owned the company she worked for at the time was a minority owner of the Falcons, so everybody that worked at that company got invited. So
I should be a minority owner of the Falcons.
You should. Probably are and just don't know it.
Son, I got a season ticket bill for my renewal before the NFC Championship game was played.
Well, they're hoping why you still had the season was still believing.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Oh, man. That was the whole idea in the wrestling business. Before the put tickets on sale for next week before the main event.
I heard that. We ain't got any callers from 615 on hold, do we? You don't recognize Bo's number by any chance, do you?
I got a 615, but it's not Bo.
Oh, okay. I told him to
Bo's
call if he got a chance.
Yeah,
he's 423, that's right.
He is on here. Let me get him on real quick.
All right.
Bo, you with us?
I'm here.
Bo,
sent me a message about back when we went to South Dakota.
Yeah, he was. I got a few answers for a few of the questions from earlier. But before I get to that, I want to know how Bobby Simmons got voted in as a chaplain when he missed the opening prayer last year.
I was the plus one other match. I didn't know I was in the opener.
You're chasing Charlie around the casino.
Jeez. I need you to I give your answers right quick, then I want you to take 10 minutes and tell Jerry about the show you called me about that night at the garage up there.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, it definitely takes all kinds. Me and Misty went to West Tennessee, I guess it's 3 weeks ago, and went to Dyersburg, which I've wrestled Dyersburg I don't know how many times, so I'm thinking we're either at the Armory or at that old college out there on the outskirts of town, and Misty's giving me directions. I said, I know where I'm going. It's at the Armory. She said, no, it's at their arena. We pulled up the front of the arena. It was a two-car garage.
Lord, that's worse than some of the VFW halls I used to work in.
Well, and the thing about it, too, was you dressed, they had a building that's right beside it. They were kind of built side by side and connected with a hallway. And where it was cool in the garage and the wind was blowing, it was warm over in the other building. Those old concrete floors were sweating. And there was about 2 inches of water everywhere you walked back there. And that's where the dressing rooms and the bathrooms were at.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man.
Now tell him about the show. Give him the whole shoot, the whole scoop. This will make him want to go back on the road.
Oh yeah. Well, it was an all girls card. They was having a tournament. They booked two girls, Misty and a girl from Harley Race's school who actually had worked before, and then one other girl that's Nikki Lane's from around Memphis is a pretty good girl worker. The rest they got out of the crowd. They were training them before the matches.
I've never heard that.
Never have I seen anything like that in my life. Never. And then expected the other girls to go out there and have matches with these girls who had probably did nothing athletic in their life, ever. And it was something, you know. When they did a tournament, the first three matches, which was the girls that work regular against the other three girls, I think the longest one of those matches was about 2.5 minutes. And some guy in the crowd who drove from Missouri yelled out, this show is going to be shorter than my trip here.
I'm sitting on the couch, and my phone pager goes off, and I looked at it, and Bo had sent me a message and said, we just went to Tater City.
Yeah. And shortly thereafter, the tears started flowing in the dressing room. It takes all kinds.
Well, I just have one question. Misty didn't cut anybody, did she?
No. I took all the deadly weapons. I locked the gun in the car and took the knives away from her. I'd already had that run in 2 weeks prior to that. If she goes for that bag, you better get out of the room, I'm telling you.
I believe your wife is some brand skin of Speedy Hatfields.
Oh.
And here's the best part of the whole story, Bobby. They called and booked us yesterday for Saturday with a much bigger payoff.
Same guy?
Well, same group, different guy.
Oh, geez.
If the price is right, we'll be there tonight.
I heard that, brother.
Now, have you heard the rumor that the Atlanta Falcons are moving to Los Angeles?
Yeah, they got that going around here. That's an arm-twisting tactic to get the new stadium built.
Yeah, I saw that on the NFL Network. I thought I was going to have to come to Atlanta to give you CPR.
Nah. Well, I told somebody today, if they moved, it would save me money. You know, so I...
Well, you know, they never thought Bud Adams was going to pull the Oilers out of Houston either.
Yeah, I know.
And they sit in Tennessee now.
Well.
Well, you got the way they played this season, you guys, I'm sure Houston's probably glad.
This is the first year that we did not go. It was embarrassing. And it was even more embarrassing when we were in Carolina on a Sunday afternoon. We worked early and got out there and hurried to Buffalo Wild Wings and asked them to turn on the Titans game. And they just looked at us. So, you know, I said, I'm serious. So they turned it on and we watched about 20 minutes and left. Fisher should still be there. So the match you was talking about, Bob Backlund and Gerald Finley.
Yeah.
That was 1980.
Okay.
It was right after the Shea Stadium show because they brought Andre and Hogan all came down and worked the Omni right after Shea Stadium.
Bobby, that's probably when you saw Fred Blassie.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. Could have been.
They sent interviews in from New York for about 2 weeks, and then they came in for 2 weeks and did the TV. So.
Hogan worked with Atlas, I know. I'm pretty sure.
No, he worked with Andre. They showed a clip from Shea Stadium.
Well, who did Backlund work in the Omni?
I don't know. I'll have to go look. I've got all the TVs from around that time, so.
I did, too. That's the reason I remembered him working that TV match with Gerald.
I think Backlund worked with Morocco, I believe. I think that's what I think it was. Don Morocco worked with Backlund. Yeah. And Backlund and Flair went to double count out.
Was Morocco regular? I know Morocco was in Georgia in 81 when I was coming up there doing TV because Morocco was there. Who else was? Tito Santana, I think, was in. I don't remember who else was around because I was split my time between there and doing TV in Dothan.
The Samoans came in the first part of 82 for 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, they were still there in the summer. See, I quit for a year. I quit after my 3 week run with Fuller as Mr. Junior America. I quit. And then in the process, I moved from Mobile to Atlanta. And when I got settled in Atlanta, I started working TV matches again. I did it for a couple of weeks, and I quit. The last match I had was with Scott Irwin, the Super Destroyer. And that was the same weekend that the Freebirds had gotten arrested in wherever it was, Chattanooga or somewhere. And the Samoans were still around then. They were on their way out. And, Bobby, that's when you cut that interview with Michael Hayes at Ole and Stan
yeah.
Hansen did that thing that was all on that same show. Well, like you had pre-recorded that tape. But
yeah, we shot that interview in the Omni.
And that was the last show I did. I quit from there. Well, I take it back. I came back and did worked two towns. I've worked in Pritchard later on in '82, and then worked in Birmingham for Floor. And that was when I got stuck riding from Pensacola to Birmingham with Dylan Duke and the Sheepherders, and that was enough there that we decided to quit.
That was an education, wasn't it?
Well, listening to a French-Canadian and two New Zealanders trying to talk to each other through the great interpreter of Jack Daniels was a treat.
That was an education.
I told Norman Charles, I said, I took a road trip with your former partner, Jonathan Boyd, one time. He said, and you survived? Oh, man. What you saw of those three is what you got there. That was not put on for TV. Jill LeDuc scared me more than anybody I think I've ever been around. I mean, he was a nice guy, but he just, you could look at him and just something about his eyes told you, you know, there's something going on back there that you don't really want to know about.
Joe was home.
Strongest guy I was ever in the ring with, but oh, Lord. Oh, man, he was something.
He just had that freakish strength, too, didn't he? I mean, he wasn't
he
the guy that went to the gym, or, I mean,
He just had it naturally strong.
You know,
we'd he did that thing in the TV studio one time where he locked his hands and he tied leather straps on like each arm, and there were six guys on either strap pulling, trying to pull his arms apart. And there may have been a work behind that, but I was pulling. They didn't come tell us to make a work out of it. They told us just to pull. And I've seen him stand up against a wall, and I know this, you know, supposedly there's a way of doing this without hurting yourself, but I've seen him stand up against a wall and put his feet on a bumper of a car and have somebody rev it up and put it in drive and rev up and it not move. He was a monster.
They had him do all those tests of strength when he came into Tennessee, and they showed him on TV for 4 or 5 weeks. He did something different. You know, they showed him pulling the bus, doing the car, the guys pulling on his arms. I mean, he's just, and just like you said, you look in his eyes, even through TV. I mean, that was the guy that he didn't have to say a word. You believed in him. He didn't have to talk you into the building. He just had to look in the camera. You know.
The funniest thing I ever heard him say, if they were running, if they turned him heel down here, because he was always a baby face down here. When he was working for Fuller, but they turned him heel, and he was working with Jacques Rougeau, Jerry Roberts. And he got on TV and called Jacques Rougeau a test tube baby. It's the funniest thing I'd ever heard with that French-Canadian accent, calling him a test tube baby. Oh, man. Now, Joe, Jerry, I know you work with LeDuc.
Yeah.
Was
yep.
it fun?
Huh?
I said, was it fun?
Oh, it was, yeah, him and, yeah, it was a thrill, let me put it that way.
What is it, as much fun as that six man with the McGuire talking
about? Listen, I should have never mentioned that.
I'm going to put together Jerry O's Greatest Hits DVD and see if we can't, sir. see if I can find the Garvins and McGuire.
That's got to be on tape somewhere.
Oh, I'd love just to find a newspaper clipping.
That's probably buried deep in the bowels of Ralph Reed's garage.
It very well may be buried in my library in here.
I put
well,
that match on there.
It is.
I put Jerry against Moose Cholock. Where was that, in St. Louis?
St. Louis. Moose Cholock. Never had the pleasure, but I saw him on TV a lot. He looked like a real winner.
You got no idea. I come out the ring and Geigle and Briscoe were both standing there. They said you should have knocked him out.
The thing about that, what was so funny about that was he was an amateur wrestling champion. But then so was Ox Baker, so you know what's that tell you?
Exactly.
That amateur stuff only goes so far.
you know, Moose worked for Dick the Bruiser all those years in Indianapolis.
Yep.
Handsome Jimmy said if Bruiser was going to switch, he would switch Moose the week before or the week after so he didn't have to work with him.
What does that tell you?
Oh.
You know, you mentioned he was a champion. You know, you talk about Ox. I'll tell you another guy was a champion that as a referee. I mean, I was scared of him, and I never did locked up with him, and that was Tim Woods. Timmy was a great guy, but Timmy was clumsy.
Very clumsy.
Yeah.
And I'll give you another one, too. Jim Raschke, Baron Von Raschke.
Yep. He was so – his body, he had an odd body shape about him, and he was
very.
So – I don't know how to describe it. Like, I would imagine wrestling him was like wrestling Gumby.
Yeah, nice guy. Never heard of, I mean, a great guy. Never heard anybody say a bad thing about him.
He was
just,
a nice guy, yeah.
He was clumsy, man. I mean, you had to really stay out of the way.
Well, somebody posted some results on one of the wrestling boards from Miami or Tampa or somewhere from 1971, 72, something like that, and there was a match on there that the minute I read it, it just sent chills down my spine. Bill Dromo against Hans Schmidt.
Oh, geez.
Hey, next week it's the Ted Allen Memorial. Bobby and Michael, remind me to have George South tell you his Baron Von Raschke Handsome Jimmy story.
I can imagine.
It is an all-time classic. Where they told George they'd give him $100 if he could take the Baron down. And he tried in the store while the Baron was getting beer out of the cooler. I'll let him finish his story next Saturday.
Oh, man.
Oh, geez.
Can you just imagine Dromo and Hans Schmidt? Because you know neither one of them were going to give an inch. They probably just stood there plowed into each other. And dared the other one to fall down.
Schmidt was an idiot.
You had that pleasure, didn't you, Jerry?
Yes, I did.
Was pleasure not exactly the right word?
Oh, Lord. I thought I was in the wrong business when I got in there with him, man.
How long had you been in the business when you worked with him?
About 2 months.
Who?
Down in Florida.
That was an education,
was
wasn't it?
I thought it was a misprint when they had me with him.
Oh, man.
That Florida wasn't no joke.
No, it wasn't. Let's see what else. Did you ever work the Kelly Twins? I had to put that on there if you worked the Kelly Twins.
Oh, please. I got a story about them.
That's another two that was dangerous. They was dangerous to themselves and anybody that was in the ring with.
I'll tell you all a story about him one night. Or them.
Well, go ahead. We got time. You can tell
me. No, we don't.
you know, they're the ones, you know, one of them, and I don't know which one it was, they're the one that billed the guy into Charlie Smith and caused Charlie to have leg surgery or something.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, happened in Savannah. Yeah, they were in here, and then they came back in here as Germans.
Yeah, the Schmidt.
Yeah. They weren't any better as Germans as they was as Irish twins or whatever they were.
Did you ever see them as the clones?
No, I miss that.
Well, they only did that in Memphis.
Yeah, they were the clones in Tennessee. Oh, gosh.
Oh, gosh. Oh. They had this little... Were you ever in a dressing room with them, Bo?
No.
They
were already gone before I got started.
They had this little, and I don't know what it was, but they had this little, I don't even know how to describe it, they had this hand motion they would do. And it was like a tick. It was something they didn't do on purpose, but they would, like, throw their hand up over their head, their right hand. It could, like, just, you know, they'd be lacing their boot, and they'd just throw their hand over their head. And they couldn't
even ride with them in a car when they're driving.
Oh, jeez.
You'll know it later. I got to try to sleep tonight.
Oh, man.
Now, did they both get killed? Didn't one of them get killed? Was it one of them or
one
both
of them?
Did,
yeah. No, just one of them.
Just one of them got killed in a car wreck, right?
Yeah. Same car wreck with Adrian Adonis.
Tarzan Tyler?
No, Tyler was the same year, but he and Pierre Lafaye were in a separate car wreck, and with Gene Dubois.
Yeah, okay.
Or was Dubois I think Dubois was with them, or maybe he was with the Kelly.
I don't remember.
Yeah,
I know Pierre was with Tarzan Tyler.
The guy that had the bear was with Kelly and Adonis.
Okay, that was Gene Dubois, Dave McKinnon.
Okay. Yeah.
And speaking of which, Jerry, where did you and he have, I sent you those pictures of you and him. Where was that from? Detroit?
Yes.
What an odd combination. Smooth Jerry Oates and the Canadian Wild Man as a team.
Listen, I did it all. I'm telling you. So I'm going to see a surgeon in the morning.
How long did you work in Detroit?
I worked up here every weekend.
Oh, really? Where were you?
Yeah,
I
was going up there every weekend.
You just working weekends? That when you had your gym?
Yeah. I went up there. I'd do Atlanta TV and go to the airport and go up there and work Detroit on Saturday nights. That was another experience.
And you actually got your money. That's really an experience.
I was getting ready to say, how many times was the box office robbed while you was there?
Well, it was robbed one time while I was there. But I got my money.
Gee.
I wrestled the Sheik on the first wrestling card they ever had at Joe Louis Arena.
At least you had a short night because he didn't work for three or four minutes. Oh, man. In the world, for 25 years, he worked five-minute matches.
I don't even know if he got 5 minutes out of him.
I think when he worked with Bobo, he got 5 minutes in because Bobo had his set routine he had to do, too. That was another one. Of course, I will say I only saw Bobo live at the end of his career, and I've seen videotape when he was much younger in the 60s, and he was a much better worker. But by the time he came through here, he was done.
I rode with Bobo when he would be in here. Me and Wrestling 2 would ride with him when he was here.
Was he funny, Bobby?
Do what?
Was he funny or what?
Yeah, he was. Oh, he was hilarious. Hilarious. He. We come out of Augusta one night, and he would drink liquor on the way home. You know, most of the guys would get a six-pack or something. He wanted liquor. And we come out, and he said, I just don't feel like driving tonight. And John said, well, let Bobby drive. And he looked at me kind of funny, and he said, he's just a kid. I mean, you know. He said, oh, he drives good. He'd be all right, because he had that great big Eldorado, burgundy Eldorado. So I'm driving, he's in the front seat, and here's a guy with a white mask on in the back seat, and we pulled in a liquor store that was not in the best part of Augusta. And he got out, he said, I'll be right back. And I turned around and looked at John, and I said, now look, bud, we don't need to be here. And John rolled the window down, and he said, if we're not here when you get back, we'll be right back. Oh. funny guy, and he could work, Mike. He was a working son of a gun, you know, when he wanted to.
He was one of the nicest guys I ever met.
Yeah, he was. He was.
Yeah.
Bobo was a smart man. He played the game. He never made any waves.
Well, except by the time I saw him, he had his set routine that he did. He did his little dance around the ring, and the guys would whip him in the corner, and he'd hit him on top of the head with his leg, and then the cocoa butt, and then that was it. But, Lord, by the time he came in here, he had to have been in his 50s. And so he was still in fantastic shape. So
he's an impressive man.
Anytime we would stop anywhere, too, if you know, we stopped to get a cup of coffee or, you know, we'd stop to eat, depending on how long the trip was or whatever, he had the same line every time. He'd say, "Here, kid, I'm going to pay. I probably made a little more than you did this week." You know, and you didn't argue with him, you know.
Oh, he was a prince of a fella.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we are just about out of time. I appreciate Terry Lawler joining us. Bo, I appreciate you joining us. Again, next week we will be joined by Scott Teal and Smokey Galento. And that should be a great show. And I made a mistake last week, and I was thinking next week's show will be the last one we do before the Mobile reunion, but we've actually got one more week in between, so we'll have to. Maybe I can put together a list of Jerry Osher's greatest hits by that time. And
listen, there's a bunch of them, brother. I wouldn't even talk about.
Oh, man. Well, I appreciate it, guys, and we'll get together next week, and we'll do this again. Bo Stouter's in trouble at the garage.
Yeah, well, we're in a different building this time, but it's the same area. We're at the big flea market. That's what the advertisement said, the big one.
Oh, boy.
As opposed to the small one. That's good.
Yeah, keep your phones nearby. I'll call you Saturday night.
I'll be looking forward to it.
All right, guys. Well, thanks a lot. We'll do this again next week.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.